The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Coming to you cordless, everybody, from the satellite to your iPhone. It's 11:02 on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 on the West Coast, and 10:02 in flyover country land here in Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters Tonight. First of all, I want to apologize for not shaving last night. I looked at the playback. I looked pretty shitty. That's all there is to it. Tonight, I did shave and shower, and for that guy who keeps texting me, telling me I have greasy hair, I just got out of the shower just now. That's what's going on. It's wet. All right? Stop it. No, actually, it entertains me. All right, and speaking of that, okay, what do we got going on tonight? Tonight is Ham Cam Thursday. I'm trying to come up with some tricky alliteration for cam, and I came up with ham because you guys are all, you're all basically trolling egomaniacs. I know that. So I thought Ham Cam Thursday, that's what it is. I'm going to talk tonight. You're going to call in. That's the way this works. The number, there's no number. It's video. You call in. All right, I get this confused here. Right there. JimAtNight.com/call. That's where you go. There's a big blue button at the top of that page. You hit the blue button, and you're in the queue. It's simple. Only, here's the only caveat. You have to use a Google Chrome. You have to use a Google Chrome web browser, but you're using one already anyway, so it doesn't matter. If you're on an iPhone or an iPad, you use a Safari browser that comes with it, because you don't know this. You can download the Google Chrome browser and a Firefox browser and a whole bunch of other browsers for your iPhone or iPad. It's just another Safari browser. They use the exact same mechanics. On iOS, you can't upload another web browser engine. You can't do it. So it's just a different, it's the same browser with a different cosmetic interface. All right, and you see this right down here? Right there. All right, I reactivated this for tonight. That's a QR code. If you aim your camera at that, you will immediately go to the page where you can click the big blue button. Now, I'm sitting in bed about a week ago. I'm staring at the ceiling. I'm trying to figure out how we can make this easier. And it just occurred to me, there's no reason that QR code can't link directly to our studio. You don't have to, in other words, you don't necessarily have to go through that call-in page. You can actually, because that's just a link too. It's a very, very complex link. Doesn't matter. The QR code can handle it. So I'm going to have that reset during the weekend. You'll notice now that this QR code has not been on the screen for quite a while. I took it down after about our first month because I came to the conclusion it was actually sometimes blocking the face of some of our guests during interviews. So I took it down. And so now I'm going to change it. And like tonight, we don't have a guest. So you're calling in. You're the guest. You want to be the guest? You call in. We can talk about anything you want. Anything. So you can go to JimAtNight.com/call. Also, you can text me or leave me a 30-second voicemail message. Let me do that again. You can text me or leave me a 30-second voicemail message at the number right here, 408-458-5088. You can remember that, 408-458-5088. You can text me, call me, that goofy guy tells me I don't wash my hair. You can do that. You can be him. But like I said, I washed it tonight, okay? All right, so we have no guests tonight. Monday, I'm taking off. I'm going to the dentist. Last time I went to the dentist, I took off, and I'm glad I did. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I was not in the mood to talk that night. I was kind of messed up. You know how the mouth is messed up? You can't talk. So we're doing the same thing on Monday. But that's okay, because that leads to Tuesday. Tuesday, Halloween. October 31st, our first annual Halloween BS Spooktacular. So the deal is, I'm going to be in costume, or whatever you want to call it, mask or something, and Don Zorro's coming, and Tim Conaway, presidential candidate, he's showing up, and maybe not, Larry Newman, and Jeff Meyer was on last night. I'm hoping he calls in for a few minutes. He's actually going to be out of town, but you know, he can. I told him, go to the men's room and call. He's going to be in a meeting or something like that. So I said, just go to the men's room, just call for 5 minutes, and you can call too. You know, I prefer you have a costume on, you know, and also you can drink. Which you, now, there's nothing that says you can't drink during the show anyway, and I suppose if you listen to me enough, you probably want to. But yeah, I'm not dissuading anybody from drinking. And we're calling it the BS show because we're not going to talk about anything of any importance whatsoever. However, knowing those guys, we will probably drift off into some politics somewhere. I don't know. But that's not the point. That's not what we're trying to do here. That's not what's going on. All right, so I got a full outline tonight. You know, I do this. I have that. You know, you guys know this. Do this by outline. So, first of all, I want to talk about this thing that happened in Lewiston, Maine, the shoot up. What time is it right now? Local time. It's 10:08 Central right now. The last I heard, about an hour and a half ago, it appears that they maybe have this guy either cornered or he shot himself, one or the other. That's what it appears. It is home in Lewiston, Maine. Or actually, his home is outside of there. The shootings were done in Lewiston, Maine. I have some thoughts about this whole thing. And you may disagree with me, and that's fine. That's kind of the point. I'm trying to make you think here. I don't do this to make you agree with me. I don't. Except for climate change. Climate change is the biggest bunch of fucking bullshit you've ever seen in your life. Climate change is complete and utter crap. And if I can accomplish anything with this show over the next 5 years, it's that I can convince you and the entire populace that that's true. There's no basis to climate change whatsoever. Actually, there's a kernel of truth to it. Yes, temperatures worldwide are rising. That's not climate change. That's a weather cycle. It's been going on for 300 years. And like Patrick Moore, who was on this guest, estimable scientist that he is, climatologist, he was on this show about a month and a half ago. And he said that 300 of those years, for half of those 300 years, there was no industrial manufacturing. Humans weren't doing anything. We weren't producing anything. And the temperature was going up anyway. So if you think it's going up because of what shit we're making, or cars, or pollution, you're just plain wrong, okay? That's the thing. They say follow the science. I did, and that's why I know it's bullshit. That's why I know. They don't follow the science. They say that, but I don't think John Kirby understands the least bit what the hell's going on here. He's a dumbass. He's a moron. And Al Gore, too. Anyway, other than that, my job is to make you think. You don't necessarily have to agree with me. That's the one caveat. Climate change is bullshit. So here's my deal on this whole shooting thing. I know it's terrible because so many people were killed. 18 so far. I think 22 injured, and with the last I heard, 3 of those people who are injured are in critical condition. They might die. So there's a lot of people who died here, but this is basically a local story. Why this, you know, took up every single drop of time on the cable news channels, and then even breakaways into the regular broadcast channel programming, I don't. You know, I understand why it did, but it shouldn't. It's like it has no effect on you unless you're in the immediate Lewiston area where they did ask people to shelter in place, and probably, arguably, rightly so. Unless you're in that real immediate area, it doesn't have any effect on you. And you're going to say, oh, Jim, it's like, gun control. Oh, bullshit. Here's the deal with this. This guy, whose name is Robert Card, apparently, he is not only in the Army Reserve, he's a trained marksman instructor in the Army Reserve. He teaches people how to shoot guns. So because of his position, you could pass laws until you're blue in the face. None of them would have applied to him. He would have got his gun and even his automatic weapon no matter what, because he literally uses them in class, literally. So a whole bunch of laws. And not only that, there's other laws that don't apply to him, too. Like, for example, in July, he was picked up by the police. This is a weird thing here. I'm being a hypocrite here. I'm kind of going back to what I'm saying, because I'm kind of curious to see what happened, because he led a battalion unit for a while, and he apparently had high respect from his soldier underlings. Everybody said he was a really, really good commander, and not only that, they said he was really, really calm under pressure. That's what they said. No, apparently, Fox News found no one who disagreed with that assessment. So something, at some point, something went wrong here, and he cracked up. So he got picked up by the police in July, and he got involuntarily committed for 2 weeks. The problem is, if you're crazy, 2 weeks is nothing. That's the problem. And I want to address something that Judge Jeanine brought up on the 5 today, but also it was brought up on my previous radio shows where we talked about this. And she brought this up. She said straight away what's going on. In the 1960s, we had mental, quote-unquote, mental institutions or seminary or whatever you want to call them, where we stashed away people who were nuts. The problem, they were sometimes at best abusive and cruel and inhumane at their worst. But think about this. Is it, and I don't know the answer to this question. This is not rhetorical. You tell me. Is it better to put somebody in a cruel, abusive institution that's for the mentally ill, or not put them in an institution at all where they're just out in the street and now they're shooting people? You know, I mean, you go to San Francisco, which has probably the worst on-street homeless problem in America, and those people are there for one of two reasons. They're either hopelessly addicted to drugs or they're nuts, right? One or the other. Now, we should have places to put people, at least who are nuts, if not the people who are also addicted to drugs. But like Jeanine said, in the 1960s and 70s, we made a decision as a society and as a legislature, federal legislation, legislative branch, to instead we had a choice to either increase the funding for these institutions or eliminate them. And we decided to eliminate them. Excuse me. That was probably the wrong thing to do. Now, it's like, you know, I'm not advocating for the federal government to spend any more money, but of course this was 50, 60 years ago when they had more money to spend. And I mean, it's like, the debt was nowhere near what it is now, even adjusted for inflation. So we basically put all these people on the street. And we either put them on the street, well, the people that were in the institutions and the people who were not in the institutions had no place to go. So, I mean, it's like, this is a quandary. This is a societal problem. We're not dealing with it right now. We just look the other way. You know, and everybody says, you know, if you didn't have any drugs, if we didn't have any guns, no one would get shot. Well, that's not going to happen. There's more guns in the United States than there are people, literally. I just found this out today. The gun manufacturers sell 1 million new guns every month. You get that? 1 million a month. That's 12 million a year. And there's 330 million people, man, woman, and child, in the U.S. And there's already 400 million guns in circulation in the U.S. 400 million. More than every person. And also, that's including the elderly and children and infants. So, what do you do? You know, this guy, he was actually, he was put away for 2 weeks. Now, he should have been put away until he was quote-unquote cured, which would have been maybe 6 months at an absolute minimum, or forever if it didn't happen. But also, like I said, we could pass gun laws to a blue in the face, and because of his very particular role here in society, he's an actual marksman instructor for the U.S. military, it wouldn't have mattered. He would have got a hold of those guns anyway. So, like I said, this doesn't this has no really immediate effect on you. You're not going to, unless you live close to Lewiston, Maine, you're not going to walk out of your house and get shot. Well, by him anyway, you know. So, and of course, some people would say that my, just the way I said that very response there, just the way I worded it, said there's a problem. We have a gun problem. We do. But the gun problem isn't with the guns. It's with people holding the guns. And a lot of people are just plain freaking crazy. And we're making more crazy people in America every single day. And part of it, now, I'm skipping to the part I left for the end of the outline, for the end of the show today. But this I'm going to bring this up right now because it's pertinent to the discussion. Recent poll done by, I can't remember if it was Harris or Gallup, maybe both, I can't remember. And the thing is, this poll was not done in the United States. This was worldwide. It was a worldwide poll that came to the conclusion that one out of every four people on the entire planet, that's 2 billion people, are lonely, will claim that they're lonely. And you know the best way to crack up? Don't have any human interaction. You know all those weird old men you see walk around downtown on the street? You know, they've lost their wives. And you know, I joke with my wife. I said, you could have married one of those guys. But you know, we both know why they're out there. You want to make a man weird, and I'm not talking about a person now. I'm talking specifically about a genetic man. You want to make a man weird, deprive him of companionship. That'll set him off. That'll push him off the deep end, especially men. Women seem to be pretty good at taking care of this because in this particular instance, they take care of that need. They're aware of it. And it's not that it doesn't happen to women either, but women are very seldom alone. I mean, you go to any nursing home, man. My father-in-law passed away a few years ago. I went to a lot of nursing homes. The vast majority of people in there are women. They're still alive, and they're also they're not nuts. As a general rule, they don't lose it. Now, I'm not a dementia or especially Alzheimer's aside, yeah, but they don't. They don't lose it. They take care of this. They know how to do this. Men don't. Men just seem lost. And that's the problem. They're lost, and then they don't know how to get unlost, and then they're permanently lost, and then they're screwy. So my point is that, you know, the whole thing about the liberal thing about the fact gun control, it's not going to do anything. Gun control isn't going to help. Now, what will help is if we got more people, more mental health. But, you know, I'm this is the part where I'm glad I'm not in Congress. Because, yeah, I could, you know, I can propose a whole bunch of shit that would either not work or cost a lot of money and not work or just cost a lot of money. And I don't know if people are willing to pay for it, you know. But it's a societal problem. We got this. And here's my deal. I brought this up, I think, last night or the night before. Because this is the second time I've talked about this survey. If this is you, go out and take care of it. And what I mean by that is like, you know, I mean, if you're naturally shy, God knows I'm not, I'm doing this. If you're naturally shy, you know, first of all, you got to get over that. And hopefully, you know, as time goes on, as you get older, you will. I mean, it's like, it's something to conquer and you have to do it because you need people around you. You do, that's all there is to it. Otherwise, this will happen to you. Got that? And it happened to my uncle. It's happened. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people I've seen this happen to. So it's not like it's not like go out and get help. I'm not talking about a doctor. What I'm talking about is go to lunch with a friend. If you don't have a friend, join an organization. The most common organization in America to join is church. You know, I'm not much for church myself, but the thing is, I'm absolutely convinced of this. At this point in American life, church is more of a social organization than a religious one. People join church not necessarily to worship the Lord. They join church to be with other people. And generally, the people in church are high-quality people. That's the other thing. So there's the start. And, you know, here's the deal. If you don't believe in church, well, you know, just put it aside. The hell with it. Fake it. You know, go. It's like, it will help. It will. Then there's other things, too. There's the Humane Society. You can volunteer. I love animals. I love animals. You know, it's like I have volunteered a lot for the Humane Society here over the years. Anyway, yeah, that's my rant. I'm sticking to it. So what else happened? Okay, I'll tell you what else happened today. our friend David Strom, who I invited on the show next week. I don't know if he's going to accept. I haven't heard back from him. He's got a busy schedule. He's been on a couple times. He's one of those people. There's a handful of people I try to have on here about once a month. I try to get him on, and he's one of them. And he wrote three stories today in Hot Air, which just shows how brilliant he is. Let me just read the headlines of one. This is really headline, CNN, Hamas was really super duper nice to the hostages. And now this is the story they're pushing. Okay, that you know that this they released this elderly woman, and she said that yeah, they had shampoo, they fed us, they had a doctor look at us every other day. Yeah, she also said they beat the crap out of her. They said that too. They beat the crap out of her, and then they sent the doctor to make sure that she was okay. But CNN left that part out. Oh, the Hamas was super duper nice to us. Jesus Christ. What a bunch of bullshit. And now I'm going ahead on the timeline, too, for the show, because this, I just realized, you know, as I'm talking, that this all goes together, too. So, here's another headline. This is from Breitbart. Disgraced CNN attracts pathetic 687,000 viewers during white-hot news cycle. Their ratings are beyond terrible. I mean, it's like you can't even make this shit up. In the last 3 years, or actually since January 2021, when Biden took office, I'm not exaggerating here. CNN's ratings have dropped 90%. 90%. Now, we had a huge news cycle the last week. We had both the shooting, and we had this crap on the Speaker of the House, and this war. I mean, Gutfeld's show on Fox has been canceled, I think, twice this week so far, because so much shit's going on. So, you know, all this stuff's going on, and CNN couldn't crack a million viewers, even during prime time. They couldn't crack a million viewers. They're not even coming close to cracking a million viewers. And like I said, in the terms of the audience counts for ratings on cable television, anything under a million is basically zero. That means basically, statistically speaking, relatively speaking, nobody's watching. And nobody's watching CNN. Nobody. Their downfall has been fucking astonishing. And it's like they can't seem to do anything to address it. And like John Nolte on Breitbart, probably was one of their biggest critics, just said, well, yeah, they got a problem. Everybody on the air there is unlikable. And that's true. I won't watch it. I watch it very occasionally just to see what they're doing, just to get enough taste or see what's going on. They're extremely unlikable. It's I don't want to watch any of these people. They seem personally unlikable, and they got liberals and stuffed up their ass. And like I said, my big problem with this is that you watch MSNBC, okay, they're liberal retards, and that's fine. But the thing is, you know they are. You know that's what you're tuning in to see that. That's what you're watching. You watch Fox News, you get kind of sort of milquetoast right-wing view, okay? And you watch news, but you know what you're getting. CNN still claims to be an objective news source, and they're so far to the left, it's mind-boggling. That's my problem. There's just an inherent, it's the original hypocrisy. They still think they're an objective, unbiased news organization. Not only that, I think they believe that. I've watched enough of this. I think they think that. I really think they think that's true. They're crazy. They're nuts. It's like, so nobody's watching. And seriously, Nolte brought this up, but he didn't have to bring this up to me because I still remember 1992, the first Iraq war is when CNN started in 1980. You have to remember this. They were the very first solely dedicated exclusive cable television channel, not news, cable television, period. They went on live 24 hours a day on cable TV in 1980, and cable TV was in its infancy. There were no other live channels on cable television. And CNN did this. And they weren't on a broadcast outlet. And everyone thought Ted Turner was nuts. Well, it turned out for a while that he showed them they were all wrong. I know that he has said now, he's an old man, but he has said, not so much privately, but publicly, that the biggest regret in his entire career was selling CNN. Because I can tell you, if he still ran CNN, this shit would not be going down. It wouldn't. He knew what he was doing. So in 1980, they went live. MTV followed a year later. MTV was the second exclusively live cable television channel. And then cable television kind of blew up after that. But in 1992, fast forward 12 years, they made their name broadcasting the Iraq War essentially live on site. They broadcast it. And everybody, first of all, it was like an amazement. And secondly, because they weren't on broadcast TV, they weren't CBS News that only did a 30 minutes every day and then had to, you know, abdicate for password or something like that. You know, they were a news channel. They got to show it 24/7. And it was like a godsend. People thought, this is amazing. We're actually watching a war in real time. And they made their reputation based on basically that incident. And they ran off into glory years till about roughly 10 years ago. I don't know. It's about the start of maybe around a year, around when Donald Trump came down the golden escalator. They decided that they weren't going to report the news anymore. They were going to be social justice warriors. And we should, you know, there are people who warned us, and when I say us, the American public, that these kids coming out of college were full of shit. But you know, and seriously, I thought this too. I thought, well, every generation thinks that. You know, my wife, she likes it. She constantly gives me shit about the fact I'm an old curmudgeon. You know, I'm always bitching about these kids. You know, and she, you know, that's her thing. You know, every generation is bitched about the kids coming up after them. But we have a problem here right now. Greg Gutfeld said this on one of his shows. He's absolutely right. He basically mirrored exactly what I was thinking. And that is, yeah, there have always been college kids who have protested freaking everything, you know, always. I mean, you go back, first of all, we protested the Vietnam War. And history has basically shown us to be right about that. That was, I mean, basically 55,000 Americans died essentially for nothing, you know. And that's what the kids were preaching at the time, is that, you know, it was handled very, very badly. It's almost a textbook case of the military-industrial complex. You almost get the impression the only reason we did this was to keep a bunch of armaments manufacturers happy. You almost get that impression. Okay, but the problem now is, for the first time ever, and it's like, this is like liberalism really, really raising its ugly head. And I got this on my outline too, so I'm segueing right into it. Right now, for the first time ever, you have college kids who are advocating for terrorism. It's mind-boggling. It's like they have come down on the side of the terrorists. And the amazing thing is, it doesn't really matter what you think of their political point of view, which is that the Palestinians deserve their own state. Okay, fine, that's fine. But they think they've gone to great lengths now to say that Hamas and the Palestinians are justified for bombing Israel, and especially in the way they did. You know, everyone's compared it to 9/11. I compare it more to Pearl Harbor. It's a nice and sunny day, and all of a sudden your house is blown up. You know, which is kind of what happened at Pearl Harbor. It's like all of a sudden, Jesus, you know, you're dancing or you're having breakfast, and then the Arizona's going down. You know, shit. So this is the difference now than anything that's happened in American life, basically ever. You know, I mean, if you trace the modern era of going back to like the 1950s, the late 50s, or the early 60s about college kids protesting, that's about how far back it goes. You know, they're rebelling. Well, okay, yeah. But now they're actually advocating for terrorism. And that's a game changer. And the other thing is, they don't seem to understand what's going on in this conflict either. Now, you can tell me I don't understand, but I'm going to tell you what I know, what I think. And the interesting thing is, Dennis Prager wrote a guest column on Hot Air, our friends at Hot Air, yesterday, saying this, basically saying the same thing I'm going to tell you now. Well, he put it in different words. You know, he says that the reason the whole world has been against the Jews is because either the Jews actually are the chosen people, as said in the Bible, or the Palestinians and everyone against them think they're the chosen people. So the difference is completely moot. Whether they really are or people think they are is kind of beside the point. So what either one makes them the chosen people. And that for that reason, they should be bombed off the face of the earth. I put it differently, and I think my explanation is probably more clear. It's envy. I think people for thousands of years have envy. It's not even that they don't envy the Jewish religion. They envy the Jewish culture, which is extremely pragmatic and extremely functional. You know, I mean, you look at what the Israelis have done with that patch of sandy beach called Israel in the last 50 years. Tel Aviv is one of the major cities in the world. You know, it is. Meanwhile, Gaza is not very big, relatively speaking, but Gaza City does hold 2 million people, which is, even by American standards, is a very good-sized city. And they have no infrastructure to speak of. And that's because in 2005 or 6, I can't remember when it was, they elected Hamas as their government. They haven't had an election since, by the way. You know, you have to understand that. Hamas immediately turned the whole thing into a dictatorship. They haven't had an election since. Excuse me. And they have basically no infrastructure. They have nothing. They don't have any running water. Their water is provided by Israel. They have no real electrical power. Their power is provided by Israel. Hamas has done nothing to cater to its own people. Now, when I was a good liberal boy 25 years ago, I had about a 10-year transition from liberalism to conservatism, or actually libertarianism, I suppose. But one of the benchmarks for me was December 2000. I've said this before. I'm going to repeat the story because it really bears repeating. December 2000, when Clinton got Yitzhak Rabin, the president of the of Israel at that time, and Yasser Arafat, the head of the Palestinians, I don't know what his title was, brought them to the White House, and he said, "We're going to figure this thing out once and for all. We're going to figure out the two-state solution." Okay, fine. So Rabin and Clinton essentially gave Arafat virtually everything he asked for, 99%. They kept a little bit just to save face, a tiny little bit. They said, "We're, you know, whatever you want." Basically, he got to write a check. "We're going to, you know, you want your state? Here it is. You can have it." And believe it or not, amazingly, Arafat said no. And in retrospect, I think this is in his biography, I'm not sure, but in retrospect, Clinton said he figured out that what was going on is that Arafat realized that if he did this, he would solve the problems of the Palestinian people, but he personally would be out of business. By solving the problem, he had eliminated his own influence. Now, this happens all over the place. This happens in professional life. I mean, at work, in politics, in the U.S., you know, people don't solve problems because they realize if they solve the problems, they personally become obsolete. And that's what Clinton said that was happening to Arafat. But the thing is, this problem was so freaking huge, and they gave him the solution he wanted, and he still said no. And I realized when I heard that, I realized, well, that the problem is never going to be solved ever. I realized that. You know, if these guys are so damn egotistical that they can't even, you know, for one moment. And the amazing thing is, okay, you know, if Arafat had done this, yeah, he would have been, he put himself out of a job. There would have been statues built to him for generations. He would have been venerated as a god among the Palestinian people. I mean, that's the part I don't get. You're going to be out of a job sooner or later anyway. You're going to die, stupid jackass. You know, it's going to happen. You're going to die either lonely or alone, or you're going to die with people worshiping a bunch of statues to you. You know, which one sounds better? You know, and it doesn't matter. You're dead either way. You know, why not just do the right thing? Do I expect too much from humans? I don't know. Sometimes I don't. This is what bothers me about the American government too. I mean, at this point, I don't think I'm out of line saying this. About 90% of the people in Congress are there for their own self-interest. They do not care about the public. Now, Jeff Meyer was on yesterday, and him and I were talking, and we brought this up about the fact that So Matt Gaetz, you know, everyone's been giving Gaetz a hard time for getting rid of McCarthy, and the fact that this took 2 weeks and four people, and they end up electing somebody nobody's ever heard of, you know, okay, fine. And so he's on Steve Bannon, and Bannon's asking him about this, you know, well, why did it take so long? And Gaetz said, and I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember what exactly he said. He said, yeah, we won. We got the point across. We have elected a hyper-conservative Speaker of the House. And yeah, Mike Johnson is. He's a very conservative guy, probably beyond my taste. He's against gay marriage. He's against abortion with no restrictions whatsoever. He's completely against abortion. He's just a very, very conservative man. And I can't argue with Gaetz. He's right. They won, you know? Now, let's see what happens here. Usually, I have to say this. Usually, people who are in Mike Johnson's position, people who kind of get pulled out of nowhere to lead something with no strings or previous attachments to it, usually end up doing a pretty good job because they realize that, well, I got nothing to lose here. I might as well do whatever the hell I want. And, of course, that's the problem in politics. Everyone's is so busy compromising about everything, especially to raise money. The problem isn't compromising with the other side. It's compromising with your own people. That's the problem, you know? So I have kind of high hopes here, even though I wouldn't necessarily agree with Mike Johnson every single policy position, you know? I kind of think that maybe he might end up doing a pretty good job. We'll see. His definite shortcoming is fundraising because he's never done it. But you know, they're raising so much money, too much money anyway. And this never gets pointed out in any on any pundit show or anything like that. But every study ever done in the last 50 years has come to the conclusion that there's no correlation between the amount of money spent on a campaign and who wins. In other words, yeah, you need a certain amount of money. But yeah, maybe you lost because people don't like you. Did that ever occur to you? Hillary Clinton, did that ever occur to you? That maybe people just don't like you? Did that ever occur to you? You know, after you spent, what, $1.5 billion, you know, and the New York Times and Huffington Post said you had a 98% chance of winning. And let's point this out. You did get more votes. You actually did. You still lost. Because in the American system, it's not just the amount of votes you get. You have to get them in a certain order. That's the way it works. And also, let's address that, too, this thing about getting rid of the Electoral College. You know, my mother's 99 years old. She's been on the show. She's extremely liberal, and she wonders what happened to me. I've now disappointed her. Okay, fine. But the thing is, she says, no, this Electoral College thing is bullshit. It's like, you know, every person's vote should count, blah, 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 blah. This is why the Electoral College exists, folks. Now, you listen to me. There's a very, very good reason for this. Because when the Constitution was enacted in 1792, there were 15 million people in the United States. There were 13 states. Got that? There were two huge cities, New York City and Boston, or Manhattan, whatever you want to call it at that time. Because, yeah, there were no boroughs then. It was actually New York was Manhattan. But they were way larger than any other cities in the colonies, okay? So what they wanted to, they being the founding fathers, what they were trying to avoid is they said there's a possibility that in these two large cities you could have a candidate who would be extremely popular in one of these cities and virtually unknown in the rest of the country, and they could still win. And that's what they were trying to avoid. That's the reason the Electoral College exists. They said that's not good for the country, and it isn't. Now, you fast forward that to today. Here's the really weird thing, and the thing is, this has been going on. The Romans noticed this 2,000 years ago. The more dense a population is in an area, the more people you have paddling in an area, the higher chance they are that they're liberal. And nobody really knows why. But this statistic has this is held for thousands of years. So you go to any major city in the United States and you wonder why all these cities have all these problems is because they all elect liberal governments. Here in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, we haven't had a Republican council person on the Minneapolis City Council in 20 years, and we haven't had more than one in 50 years. This city is run entirely by liberal people. This is not the least bit unusual. I don't have to tell you this. Even down in Texas, conservative Texas, Austin, liberal. Dallas, liberal. It's like, there's something about it. You cram a bunch of people in a small space, and they're liberal. No one understands it. So by eliminating the Electoral College, you would basically have the multifaceted version of the same thing. You would have liberal enclave. The major cities could elect a candidate that was completely unwanted by the rest of the country, even though they have like less people overall. Now the interesting thing, if you've seen the electoral map from the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton, that's exactly what happened. You know, Trump won the vast majority of the counties in the United States. But Hillary won the major cities, which is the reason she actually did end up getting more votes. But that's also the reason she got less electoral votes, because it's done by state, and so, it's like I don't know what is Pennsylvania, you have 24 electoral votes, so if you win Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, you're pretty much going to win the whole state, but you can't do that in most other places where you have smaller cities. Anyway, that's the way that math works. That's the reason. And that's what the founding fathers are trying to avoid. And actually it was very prescient. They foreshadowed this a lot. So no, we can't get rid of Electoral College. If we get rid of Electoral College, we'll never have a non-liberal or a non-democratic president ever again. Of course, that's their goal. That's what they want. So that's what would happen. I mean, right now they have the press locked up, they have academia locked up, and they have the current federal government. Most of the people who work for the federal government are liberal, and although you may see statistics that say about the fact that there's plenty of jobs open in America, the last thing I don't know if it was last month or the month before, 25% of all the job openings in the United States were with the federal government. Not even state and local governments, the federal government. One out of every four was with the federal government. They are trying to blow the federal government up to make it a monster. It's nothing will, because nothing will ever get done. It's very simple. Oh, man. Holy shit. How long have I been talking? Call me up. Would you call me up and relieve me of this misery, would you? And this is really something, too. I want to address that, too. Things are not going well. So we had I got to look this up here. There was a labor statistics, speaking of that, came out today. And they were, hold on. I got to find the actual number. GDP went up 4.9% in a month, which is huge. That's actually normal. Normally, people would be clinking champagne glasses about this. But the problem is all the other numbers are so sketchy that everybody is predicting now that this coming year, we're going to have severe financial problems. Now, we've had Murray Sabrin, another one of our regular guests on the show, economist. He's been predicting this for like 4 or 5 years, that sometime in 2024, we're going to have a really, really major recession. And that's the way it's starting to look, too. Because these numbers, that number is great, but the underlying numbers are terrible. And that's the thing. And so, right now, it's basically, it costs twice as much to buy a house in real money now than it did 4 years ago, just 4 years ago when Trump was president. It now costs twice as much money, or you can get half the house you did 4 years ago, just 4 years ago. And there's all sorts of numbers I could pull out at this, but yeah, it appears that Murray's going to be right. Bidenomics is a complete, and first of all, they're going to rue the day they even came up with the term, because Bidenomics is going to end up defining Biden's presidency in the in a negative way. That's all there is to it. You know, and who do they think they're fooling? You know, these people who you know, order everything off of Instacart, you never even go grocery shopping, never have to even, you know, think about it because they all have, you know, getting paid easy six-figure salaries. It never occurs to them there's anything wrong because they can afford for that stuff not to be wrong. But for the average person, I do the shopping in my family. It's nuts. I go to the grocery store. I mean, I can't tell you the number of things that I have. Pizza I used to buy for years about eight. It was $8. It's frozen pizza. It's Bellatoria. It's probably the best frozen pizza you can get. That's my opinion. I love pizza. I love it. As frozen pizza goes, you probably can't do much better. All of a sudden, I go to the store. It's now $12. It went up 50%. I know a lot of things in the grocery store in the last 2 months that have gone up a whole 50%. Just, well, we got to raise the price. We can't afford to sell it so cheap. It's, you know, everyone passes their costs down, and, you know, the next thing you know, you're the consumer, and you're literally holding the bag. You are holding the grocery bag. Oh, well. So things aren't looking well. That's, you know, I can sit here, bitch about Biden being a fool. And also, there's another thing, and this really needs to be discussed. The president has disintegrated physically, even in the last 2-3 weeks. I mean, I don't know if you saw any of he did a sit-down press conference and a stand-up press conference over in Israel, Netanyahu. He looked terrible and could barely talk. A lot of the stuff he said was basically unintelligible. You could not hear, you could not understand what he was saying. I'm watching this, I'm thinking, holy shit. And nobody's talking about it. Nobody in the mainstream press actually mentions it. And it's like staring you in the face. The president is not well. The president cannot talk. And then they're wondering why, you know, Iran is bombing us. And they actually are. They've in the last 2 weeks, they've dropped bombs on some of our Middle Eastern bases like 14 times. You don't hear that really from the press either. There's a whole bunch of shit that the press does not report. And this is another thing that David Strom wrote about today in Hot Air, too. I'm going to read that headline for you. He says, it's just called the MSM versus the alternative media. You know, and yeah, the alternative media, they're lying, you know. And people are starting to finally to figure this out. And when I mean people, I mean the major public. Poll came out, Gallup poll, just this was last week. Excuse me. Trust in the press in the United States is at an all-time low in the media. 32%, only 32% of the people in the country said they trust the press. It was either, quote-unquote, a lot or a fair amount. All the rest of them were, it was negative. That's the low. That ties for the lowest it's ever been. 32%. The average person is starting to figure this out. Now, I got to admit, I know a lot of my liberal friends that haven't. They're constantly telling, you know, when I go out socially, I don't talk about politics at all. I never bring it up. And my friends have started, I have to say, they're starting to clue in on this, and one of them actually said a very nice thing to me a couple of weeks ago, which I'm not going to mention on the air. But it was to the point was that, you know, they have learned not to talk about politics either. And we have a much better time. We're not there to, you know, it's like, I'm not doing a show with you, you know. It's like, that's, you know, that's, this is my job, and I'm not doing a show with you. And we're not, you know, we're here to enjoy each other's company. Not only that, some of these people I've known for 40, 50 years, literally. I'm a really old SOB. And so what is the point of, you know, this is in real life, quote unquote real life, when I'm out and about, my thing is, and you know, I know there's a couple of people in my industry here that disagree with me, but I don't really care. Unless I really think I have a shot at changing somebody's mind about an issue, I don't want to talk about it. I don't. Well, maybe it's because I have this outlet. I can do this, you know. So I'm talking to you folks four nights a week. And we've only been on the air 10 weeks, right? I have to be honest with you. Not a lot of people watch the live show, but the numbers on our playback are pretty good. I'm pretty pleased with that. I am, especially considering the fact we've been doing this less than 3 months. Especially that we've had shows that have been watched by thousands of people, and that's a pretty cool thing. And as of yesterday, our following numbers on Rumble cracked 650. So I'm pretty happy about that too. Like I said, we've only been doing this less than three months. So, I don't do 5 nights a week. I do 4. Why? Because it would kill me. You know, I was gonna mention this tonight too. I almost put this in the outline. Just to talk bullshit. I am astonished. I just turned 68 a couple of weeks ago. I'm becoming really lazy. For the first time in my life, it's not even that I don't like working. I would rather do other shit. And you have to understand, I've been a workhorse my entire life. I went years in the 1990s sleeping only 4 hours a day. I had 2 high-pressure jobs. I had both of them simultaneously. I'm not going to tell you what they are. But yeah, they had nothing to do with each other either. That's the other thing. So I was running 2 organizations, and I was sleeping 4 hours a day. I was going to the gym at 3 o'clock in the morning. No shit, I really was. And I loved it. Most of my life, I've loved working. You know, matter of fact, most of the time, I'd say, I didn't get enough. You know, give me more work. You know, I loved it. It made me high. Now, at 68, all of a sudden, and this has only happened like the last 3-4 years, it came on slowly. But I would, you know, nothing makes me happier at this point to sit in my living room and watch television. I don't really care what it is. And I got my communicator device, my phone, and I'm on Wikipedia, and I want to see who's starring in the movies and Turner Classic Movies and whether they're dead or not. And my cat, Henry, sits with me, and I love him. You know, I love him. I would rather be with him at this point than anybody, and I can spend hours doing this. Hours. I'm getting lazy. You know, shit. Now, you know, the booking for this show takes up a good amount of time. There's all sorts of stuff I got to do and all this sort of stuff. Here's the deal. I get around to Dorinda eventually. I don't know how to explain it. I'm not saying this is a good thing, you know. I don't know if it's age. I don't know if I don't know what the deal is, you know. I mean, I still prepare for this program every night. I like talking to the people. I like interviewing people. You know, I read the books. I do all that stuff. I do that shit. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. But anyway, you know, so Strom writes a story in Hot Air today, and he's absolutely right. It's like the people, the public is basically starting to get a clue that, well, here's the deal. And I can't remember. We had a guest that brought this up. I can't remember who it was. But it's true. There is this kind of myth that this only started till relatively recently, the last 10 years. But the fact of the matter is, the mainstream media has been fucking you over for the last 60 years, except you never noticed. That's the deal. They've always been liberally biased. And of course, they don't see anything wrong with it. They don't actually even see the bias. They don't. They don't see the fact that they're biased. They can't wrap their mind around it. So they don't think they're doing anything wrong. Or at least they didn't. Now, I mean, there wasn't the social justice warrior crap 20, 30 years ago, but there was definitely liberal bias, no doubt about that. And we had way less news outlets, and you basically had to put your trust into an editor to decide what got on the air, what got on the newspaper, and what didn't. So there's a whole bunch of stuff you never knew because it never got printed or picked up on television. And then you have to, just going back to what I was talking about before. So CNN started in 1980. Before then, there was basically, television news consisted of 3 half-hour programs every night, one on each network. You had Uncle Walter, you had Huntley and Brinkley, or John Chancellor, and you had Frank, oh God, what was the name? Oh, Jesus Christ, I'm not going to forget. The guy who was on ABC. Frank something, or Peter, you know, you fast forward, Peter Jennings is probably the guy who was known, best known for that, you know, Peter Jennings, who did a documentary on UFOs that completely discounted the phenomena, said it was crap, and did a, a documentary on JFK assassination and came to the conclusion, yeah, Oswald did it. And I'm still thinking to this day that he got paid off to do that shit. That's the other thing. You know, we've mentioned this before. There's Operation Nightingale that started in the 1970s. It was run by the CIA. This is not speculation. This is verified shit. You can look this up online. It's through the Freedom of Information Act. That's how this was discovered. The CIA in the 1970s paid the 400 most prominent journalists in America. And they weren't nobodies. They literally went down the list of the most famous journalists and approached them one by one and said, here's the deal. We want to do your patriotic duty. We want you to either report certain stories incorrectly or not report them at all. And we will tell you which ones they are, and we'll pay you to do it. And some of the reporters were so damn flattered, they were asked to do this, they didn't even take the money. No shit. They thought, well, my government needs me, so I'm going to do that. And that was kind of the attitude back then. You know, no one really, until Watergate came along, nobody really questioned the federal government about anything. You know, you figure you were, yeah. This was about the time this happened, just before Watergate kicked in. But that was still, so you had years of this, of the government paying, or the government, or specifically the CIA paying reporters to report stories wrong. And I swear to God, I think Jennings got paid for both the UFO shit and the JFK stuff. I think they did. I think they just paid him. You know, the one thing, you know, I did not have any, I did look for some. There was no real UFO news of any consequence this week. So I'm not going to end with that. But I will tell you about my utter fascination. And I talk about this all the time. I don't care because I think it's really important. My utter fascination about the fact that of how the UFO phenomena intersects with both the media and politics. Because people, you know, say to me, you know, my big claim to fame is that I've been saying for 30 years the UFOs are real. And for 30 years, people said I was nuts until that article came out in the New York Times in December 2017. Now, Congress is looking into UFOs. I mean, the whole atmosphere and attitude around the whole thing has changed. And so people ask me, how did I know? And I'll say, and my answer to that is, well, you know, you may think that I had a feeling or it was believed. No, it wasn't. It was government documents. There are government documents that talk about this since the 1940s, and especially from the 1950s onward. There's no real, with one exception, there's no real documents that talk about aliens. But they did definitely talk about the UFOs. They're all over the place. I mean, I can't even tell you the number. There's, I would say, at least 6 dozen different governments that documents that have been uncovered through the Freedom of Information Act historically that discuss UFOs. And in virtually all those documents, memos, it was either discovered or acknowledged that UFOs were real. That's the thing. That's why I knew. It was simple. It was very simple. The government knew. They admitted they knew. You know, now there's no speculation about who was piloting these things, but the UFOs are real, you know. So, and then the question is, well, Jim, if you knew, how come this never got reported? And my answer to that always is, that's a damn fucking good question. I don't know. And that, I think the reason is because the CIA paid people not to report it. That's what I think. You know, up until 2017, if you reported anything about UFOs, you were kind of laughed out of the newsroom, or, you know, it's like, it was a joke. You know, it was the type of shit that made the bottom of the newspaper column for fill-in, you know? But it's not a joke. It's real. Now, I said about the one exception. There's no smoking gun that says that the aliens are here. That's a thing. There's always been the separation between the UFOs, the flying machines, and who's piloting them. But there is one document. It's on the FBI Vault website. It's the single most viewed thing on that website. It's a one-page memorandum from some field, what are they called, special agent out in the field, to the Home Office, to J. Edgar Hoover, and it says the memo is basically about this. It says, just to paraphrase, it says, well, we've got these three, you know, we're out in the desert somewhere in Arizona or something. We have these three this crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft and these three dead aliens. What do you want us to do with them? That's basically what the memo's about. Now, for years, once this got actually, this got slipped, the FBI vault was open with like 1 million documents in them. And so somebody stumbled onto this, you know, and it's been passed around and passed around all over the place. The UFO community went nuts. The FBI's response to this was just bullshit. It was a complete, utter mistake. They were mistaken. Nothing to see here. That's what they said. Well, bullshit. Come on. So what, so a bunch of FBI agents couldn't tell what an extraterrestrial spacecraft was? I mean, you know, that's crap. It's the same thing about Roswell. You know, people forget this. So the Roswell, New Mexico was the, I can't remember the name of it. It was a 501 bomber group, is it? I think it was. That was the only bomber group in the entire world in 1947 that knew how to drop atomic bombs. It was the bomber group that bombed Nagasaki and Hiroshima. The only one on the entire planet. All those Russian military shit, all, you know, Japanese, what number, didn't matter. It was the only one. So because of that, the absolute best and brightest in the Army were sent to that base. They were all fucking military geniuses there. So they put out a press release saying, well, we got a crash flying saucer. And then the next day they changed this to know it's a weather balloon. You're going to tell me that the most brilliant people in the Army couldn't tell the difference between a weather balloon and a crash flying saucer? No, that's crap. These people, and the people who came forward in later years, Walter Hopp, Jesse Marcel, all these people who were witnesses of this, they said the same thing. When it was insulting to their intelligence that they couldn't tell the difference between a weather balloon and a crash flight. And then the story was, well, it was a special weather balloon. It was a top secret mogul weather balloon to capture Soviet radar or something like that, and which was a real program. It's still a fucking weather balloon. It's a balloon. Actually, the mogul balloons were a bunch of balloons set up in series. There were like 9 balloons, but still, they're balloons. What the fuck? It's like somebody actually figured out that based on the description of the debris field at the Marcel Ranch outside of Roswell, actually, it's closer to Corona, New Mexico, that there's no way that even 9 or 10 weather balloons, which was the mogul array, it was pretty freaking huge. I got to say, the mogul weather balloon array was like 9 or 12, 10 weather balloons in a row, and it went up really high. It was not your normal weather balloon, but still, they're balloons. They're filled with gas, right? Okay, somebody figured out that there's no way in hell that balloon could have created enough debris to fill that debris field. Not even close. Why? Because it's a fucking balloon. That's why. So, you know, some of this shit is just so plainly obvious that you can't, you know, it's like I master the obvious for bringing it up. It's like kind of end of story, you know? Like, you're going to tell me the most brilliant people in the Army could not tell the difference between a metallic flying machine and a weather balloon. Bullshit. Well, that's my story, and I'm sick of doing it. And you didn't call tonight. I'm depressed. That depresses me, you know? So, okay, so we're taking Monday off. The next thing in time I'm going to see is Halloween. We're going to have a special Halloween backdrop here. We're changing it. I'm going to have some sort of costume on. I told the guys who are coming, I said, look, here's the people I invited. I said, look, your costume at minimum has to be either a mask or headgear, one or the other. Well, you know, I mean, you can barely see me, although I'm wearing a sport coat tonight. Excuse me, I hit the microphone, itching my nose. I kind of got this. I'm trying to spiff it up a little bit, you know. I don't know. That's our show, folks. I'm getting out. I'm gonna go have some iced tea or something. I want to thank you for watching. I can't tell you enough. I enjoy doing this immensely, and I'm glad you're. Our numbers, considering the fact we haven't even been on the air 3 months, our numbers are pretty damn good. I want to thank you for that. So we normally were off on Friday anyway. I'm taking Monday off. I'm gonna get teeth work done, and I don't want to try to talk at 10 o'clock at night. Last time, it's the same thing. I had like a 4 p.m. appointment, and I got home. I wasn't feeling good, And even at 10 o'clock, when I would have normally done the show, I kept track. I still wasn't really feeling good. I'm glad I took it off, so I'm doing it again. I might feel fine at 10 o'clock on Monday night, but I'm not going to risk it. And besides, Monday will be fun, or Tuesday will be fun. So I hope you folks have a nice weekend. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.